Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 1964.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Mountain Man Dan Show.
Down, but a war is known to change a man. The whiskey's known to change a man. That's not me. I rarely drink from the bottle, but I'll smoke a little weed.
All right. I know it's been a long time since we put out an episode. I think the last episode was published in like June of 2021. You know, life got busy, things happened. I started trying to record a few times, got busy, and next thing you know, the show, it just kind of died. But lately, a lot of you guys have commented on Facebook, Instagram, other places that I talked about the podcast, saying, you know, you missed the show. And then I logged into the publisher app to check stats and stuff a couple weeks ago, and I was quite surprised at how many listeners we were still getting and how many I'd gained since the last episode aired. So I decided it was time to get back at it. You know, I've been busy working on the podcast format, trying to change things up to make the show flow better and be better quality instead of just me rambling on for 45 minutes to an hour. I'm really hoping that writing out scripts instead of just trying to come up with the show in my head will make for better content and also cut down on the editing time. I remember with one of the last shows I put out, after editing out all the pauses and and stuff like that, I had shortened the episode by about 7 minutes or so. And you know, nobody wants to listen to that stuff, to be honest. I'm surprised you guys enjoy listening to my ramblings at all. So, I set up a different recording setup. Before, I had a hard time trying to do the show solo because it just didn't seem to flow well, and I'm hoping that spending the time to write out scripts, which is what I'm doing with this episode, will make things flow smoother. I would still love to do a co-host or a guest, but it just doesn't always work out. So right now, if I want to stick out to putting out weekly episodes, I just can't always count on having a co-host. You know, I was dealing with Nick for a while. He got busy. Roy's been here a couple times, but it's hard to get everybody together every week. So I'm gonna work on trying to do the episodes by myself, so we can get out weekly episodes for now. I'm also hoping that breaking the show up into segments will allow me to record in shorter sessions and also not need to have co-host or guest on the phone for the full time that it takes to record the episode. Another thing I did is I bought a real podcasting mic instead of just trying to use a cheap gaming headset that I had. I think I may have had this microphone for a couple of the very last episodes, but here out we should be working with the good recording equipment. And then I also made some changes to the editing software to hopefully be able to edit out background noises and just produce a better quality show all the way around. This new mic I picked up, I didn't know anything about mics when I bought it. And I forget which it is, but basically it picks up everything. With this episode, you guys will probably be able to hear the dogs and that kind of stuff. And I'm hoping to get a better recording setup so that I can, you know, have a higher quality show, better area to record that'll be a little quieter. And, you know, there's going to be a learning curve with this new setup, so you guys will just have to bear with me a little bit. I'm also kind of hoping that breaking the show up into segments with the first segment, which is this one, just kind of being a weekly update about what I've been up to and maybe updates on projects I've been working on. You know, I'm always working, like, we're still building the cabin, and I'm always working on vehicles or chainsaws or something or another. Anyway, so, with all that being said, what have I been up to for the last year and a half since the last episode? Well, typical Alaska stuff for the most part. Still working on the cabin. I just mentioned that. Bought a new truck this past year, this past spring. Actually, that turned out into quite a bit more of a project than I was really hoping it would be. I'm sure you guys will hear more about that. Actually, as a matter of fact, I could do a whole episode on that truck and help you not do what I did when I bought that truck. It was kind of a mistake. Lately, I've also been working on a full-size K5 1981 GMC Jimmy that I bought for a plow truck. And I'm also kind of hoping to fix it up and use it for a hunting and off-road truck. My buddy Roy, who's been on the show before, he just bought a I want to say it's like a 70s model, something like that. Mercedes Unimog, actually, this past fall. And we're hoping to use it on upcoming hunting and fishing trips and other, you know, backwoods Alaskan adventures. You know, as a matter of fact, I might have to try to get Roy on the show again sometime. We can talk about the plans for the Jimmy and his Unimog. You know, ultimately, I would love the one-ton swap, you know, put some one-ton axles in the Jimmy and maybe stick it on, like, I don't know about Humvee tires, but something about that size, you know. So I have to, but, you know, we'll just have to see where we end up. And it needs some other work as well, you know. It needs some rust repair, and it's got a 350 motor in it, but it's not running quite as well as I'd like it to, so I need to do some more work there. Other than that, it's been a lot of, you know, just been a lot of the same this last year and a half. I just got done rebuilding the engine in our 08 Chevy Suburban, and that was a bit of a learning experience, but, you know, it's running good now. I did a few upgrades on it while I had it apart, like a BTR truck noise cam, and I got rid of the AFM system and had it tuned by Texas Speed down there, and it's running really good now. It was just, you know, it was supposed to just start. I just needed head gaskets. It was leaking, so it was getting some chocolate milk in the oil pan, and it was supposed to just be head gaskets, and I got in there and found a lot of other things I wasn't happy with, and it turned into a lot more money than I intended on spending on that project, a lot bigger project than I intended on it being. But, you know, it's been a good truck. We just put a new transmission in it this past spring, and I'm hoping now with the new engine, it will be a good truck for us for a few more years, you know, for a long time to come. So, and then, you know, working on the cabin here, it's been a little bit slower than the wife would like, but we're getting there. Got most of the drywall done in the bathroom, and we're getting ready to start trying to get our crap moved out of the bedroom here so we can finish the drywall in there. We're just, you know, got the vapor barrier up right now. It's, you know, it's not as nice as it could be, but we're working on it. You know, it's slow going, and that's how it is when you pay cash. You know, you were paying cash to build this place, and you don't always have the cash to work on things. When you do have cash to work on things, it seems like other things come up, like having to do a $5,000 engine rebuild on a truck you weren't planning on doing that much work on. So it is what it is. So anyway, hopefully we can move on getting the show back on the road and keep you guys updated on some of the comings and goings of life here in Alaska. Okay, so we will see if this segment stays in or not, but I know there are a few other cigar smokers that listen to this show. Or we could change it up and talk about drinks, you know, coffee, alcohol. I'm not really a big alcohol drinker, but it might just be interesting to just kind of have some extra short segment to talk about, you know, whatever, the other guys, you know, other men and, you know, I guess ladies too, the other things we enjoy. If it stays, it'll be short, to the point, may not be in every episode, depending on where I'm set up and recording. You know, or I set up the recording equipment as well, if it's a place where I can smoke or not. Also might talk about smoking meats, you know, who knows. Right now, I'm recording out in my neighbor's shop that I'm running for the winter, and I'm smoking a CAO America, which is one of my favorite cigars. And I mean, you know, come on, what's not to like? I tend to lean towards a fatter cigar. You know, and the Landmark version of this cigar is a very nice 6-inch by 60 ring gauge, with a Connecticut broadleaf barber pole wrapper, you know, all American tobacco in this cigar. You know, I'm not much into the tasting notes and all that, but I will say it's a nice medium body cigar. It got a 92 rating, and I would definitely recommend trying it out if you were a cigar smoker, but it's probably not the best choice for a new smoker. And that's going to be it for that segment. That's this episode. You guys can just kind of talk to me and let me know if you like that kind of stuff, or we can cut it out of the show completely. We'll see where it goes as we get this show back on the road. All right, here we go. The part everybody's been waiting for, the meat and potatoes of the show. If we have a guest or a co-host that hasn't been here for the whole show, we'll probably introduce them here moving on. Probably won't do pre-written scripts unless I'm recording by myself like I am today, but still have some notes and whatever instead, just the full free roam, which is what we used to do, or as one of the listeners referred to as shooting from the hip. I thought that was pretty good. So, today we're going to be talking about the 10mm auto. Yes, the 10mm that I've crapped all over in previous episodes. I never really full out hated the cartridge, but I don't like all the keyboard commandos who have never shot anything other than paper saying the 10mm is equal to the 44 Magnum, and I've had a bad taste for the 44 Magnum in my mouth because of that. Don't dribble on my beloved 44 Magnum, okay? Just don't. Anyway, About October 2021, I went to the local gun shop, and they had some Springfield XDM Elite Compacts in there, chambered for 10mm. Now, generally, I'm not a fan of short grip pistols, but this one, you know, it just fit my hand real nice, and I just had to have it. It happens sometimes. You walk into a gun store, and you impulse buy things, and I did. I impulse bought this 10mm. I'd also, at the time, I had been kind of looking for a 10mm, because up here, there's always 10mm ammo available. Every store I go into, full stock 10mm ammo. And I think I've actually talked about that on the show when we used to record. You know, and I've been kind of considering moving into something a little more compact than my 1911. It's the job I'm working. You know, they're kind of okay with me carrying, but they're not really supposed to. But they're okay with it as long as I'm concealed. And the 1911 tends to print a little bit. You know, it's a full-size gun. So I'd kind of been looking for something a little smaller to carry. So I bought the gun. I ordered a couple holsters for it. I actually wrote an article about this gun that is published over on gunblast.com. I ended up, you know, I tried a cheaper Kydex holster, you know, trying to, a friend of mine that owns a small business, you know, trying to help him out, didn't care for it. So I ended up ordering a Simply Rugged CUDA. And this one, Rob actually sent me a holster that's made out of Cape Buffalo hide. And this is a tough holster. I mean, it's the toughest holster I have ever seen. It's been on my belt for over a year now, crawling around under trucks and working in the shop and working construction and going back through the brush and doing whatever else I do. And the holster still looks like new. I mean, you can't even tell I've ever worn it. The gun and the gun grip, you know, the polymer, the grip shows some wear. So the polymer definitely isn't as tough as the aluminum grip frame and the stags that are on my 1911. But that, you know, it's okay. It's a work gun. So anyway, overall, I ended up liking the gun way more than I thought I would. And I was really impressed with the accuracy of the pistol. When I first picked it up and I was testing it out, I mounted a Holosun 507 red dot on it. And I found the gun would shoot way better than I could. And I shot several groups, and they're in the article. There's pictures of these groups in the article, you know, during the initial testing. That were, you know, clover leaves at 15 yards. And my only real complaint with the gun is that it has an ambidextrous slide release, which I know I'm left-handed. I like a ambidextrous slide release and safety if you have one. But the mechanism on this particular slide release, I guess it's slide lock, not a release. But, you know, you should be able to drop the slide with it. Anyway, the mechanism has a little bit more flex in it than I would like to see. If there's a magazine in the gun that's an empty magazine, you cannot push down on the right side control and drop the slide. It has too much flex and won't push down the magazine spring. But other than that, I've been super happy with the gun. You know, it's a small gun. It's about the same. It's actually a little bit smaller than a Glock 29 or a Glock 30. You know, they're compact 10mm and 45. It's skinnier. So I find that the heel of the grip fits really well into the cup of my palm when I'm gripping. You know, and then I wrap my strong hand pinky under the base of the magazine, pulling up a little bit with the grip. And the index finger of my support hand, I can do kind of like Jerry Michalik, and I put it around the front of the trigger guard, pulling back, and the gun just locks into my hands. Very comfortable to shoot. Very good recoil control. Actually, I would say the recoil control is actually way more manageable than I was expecting from the small pistol. But then again, you know, the 10mm isn't the anti-tank round everybody makes it out to be. That being said, let's talk about the cartridge a little bit more. Designed by Jeff Cooper by cutting down a 30 Remington case to 25mm, the cartridge hit the market in 1983 with the original Norma ammo pushing a 200-grain bullet. I want to say it was like a 200-grain bullet, like 1,260 foot per second. I'm going off of memory on all this. But I want to say that the original Norma ammo was like a 200-grain bullet at about 1260 right there. So initially the cartridge was only chambered in the Bren 10 pistol, which were kind of high-priced. But Colt brought out their, pretty soon after they brought their Delta Elite pistol out. And if it hadn't been for the Delta Elite and the FBI starting testing with the 10mm after the aftermath of the 1986 Miami shooting, I think the 10mm probably would have died right there. You know, the Bren 10s were overpriced, and I think the 10mm probably would have just faded away into history. And, you know, it kind of did for the most part until recent years. It had started making a pretty good comeback these last few years. But there for a while, it seemed like the 10mm was just kind of dead. Speaking of the FBI, they actually did adopt the 10mm. and the in the Smith & Wesson 1076, I believe. After testing the cartridge in the 1911 platform, as well as a Thompson submachine gun. Unfortunately, during the testing, they found that the cartridge produced too much recoil for most of their agents, and like many other things that the government has ruined, they had the 10mm neutered and created the 10mm light, or the FBI load, as a lot of people call it, which is, unfortunately, what most of your factory ammo today is loaded to those lower specs, unless you go after, like, the bare loads. The FBI load that they specced out pushed a 180-grain bullet right around, like, 950 to 1,000 foot per second. Of course, you know, Smith & Wesson realized that they could get those same results from a shorter case that fit in a 9mm-sized gun, and they brought out the 40 Smith & Wesson. Or it's a 40 Smith Short and Weak, or 40 is Stupid and Worthless, however you want to look at that. I'm not going to get into that too much right now. Anyway, yeah, so the FBI adopted it for a few years, and then although the 10mm is no longer used by the FBI in handguns, and hasn't been, you know, for some time, they did adopt specially made suppressed MP5s in 1994, and they still use it in that platform today with, like, their hostage rescue teams and that kind of stuff, as far as I know. I can't really say what caused the comeback the last few years with the 10mm, but but it seems like it's seeing much more popularity now than it has for for most of its life. I remember growing up at the in the gun shop here in Alaska that my parents run out of the basement, and you know, we'd have customers come in, I hear them talking about the 10mm and that kind of stuff, but it just wasn't a super common choice for backwoods carry back then. In the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, it seems like within the last few years, you know, pretty much every internet expert rains glory on the 10mm as the end-all, be-all for bear defense, you know, and they claim that, oh, it holds more rounds, bro, and you can mag jump 21 rounds on a bear, bro, and others, you know, just other such claims like that, and it just... All right, so let's just take a step back here for a second, and remember that a charging grizzly can cover 50 yards in a straight line in about 3 seconds, you know, and, you know, I've lived in Alaska here my whole life. The bear at 50 yards, I'm not going to be too worried about him, really. You know, he's probably just going to go on about his business. But if he wanted to, 50 yards away, 3 seconds, he's on you. So, let's just be honest. Can most shooters get the gun out of the holster, sights on target, and dump 15 rounds of 10mm on target in 3 seconds? And, you know, I doubt it. I know there's shooters that probably can. But I don't. It's not your average backwood backpacker, hiker, tourist coming up to Alaska to see the wildlife isn't going to be able to do that. So, and that's why I've always kind of promoted big bore, hard hitting Magnum handguns. I'm a big fan of the 44 Magnum. Everybody's aware of that, you know. And I've promoted the big bore Magnum handguns for bear defense because most likely, you're not going to have that much time to get that many shots off, and I want something that hits as hard as possible if I only have time to get one, maybe two shots off. My thoughts on this changed a little bit last December, and actually right here in our driveway, I had to drop a charging bull moose, and I was carrying the Springfield 10mm, and I dropped him. I dropped him with the 10mm. So since I pulled in the driveway coming home from work and my wife knew that bull was out there hanging out, and he was being aggressive towards her and the dogs all day. When I pulled in the driveway from work, she actually came out. So the incident was caught on camera. You know, I pulled in the driveway, I honked the horn a couple times, the moose ran around to the back of the house, which is plowed, and we just had a big snowstorm, and there was like 3 inches of ice. It snowed like 3 feet and then it rained, and there was like a 3-inch crust of ice on top of the 3 foot of snow, and the moose were being super aggressive, as were the buffalo and everything else. So anyway, the back around back of the house is plowed, and I expected him to just go, you know, he ran back there, and I expected that to be the end of it. And as soon as I jumped out of the truck, he comes charging back around the corner of the house, and I dropped him. And my wife actually caught all this on camera because she, you know, heard what was going on outside and come up and just started recording. So watching that video, I dumped 12 rounds out of that little compact 10mm in about 4 seconds. You know, and of course I wasn't shooting hot and heavy bear loads at the time. I just gotten the gun. I hadn't really settled on a carry load yet. And I had some, I think it was 180 grain CCI blazer, like this full metal jacket. And I think CCI, and I mean, that's like a 1150 foot per second load, maybe, probably closer to 1100. So, but, you know, I watching the video, I'm pretty sure the moose was dead on the first round, and he was just the momentum since he was charging, and it just kept coming my way. But nonetheless, you know, I kept pulling the trigger until he stopped moving about 3 feet away from me, and I made 11 hits on his head. And, you know, it's funny, I didn't realize in the heat of the moment that I'd emptied the gun until I went to reholster it and the slide was locked back. You know, in the heat of the moment, I thought I fired like 3 or 4 rounds. So, anyway, yeah, so after I picked up the XDM Compact, I got more curious to play with the 10mm and managed to get my hands on a Glock Model 29 and a earlier XDM full-size, not the Elite model, but just the full-size one. The Elite model, just the only difference between it and the older model, it has a flat face trigger, it has a better trigger in it, and has the just like some different stippling. Like, it's got more aggressive stippling on the grip and better slide serrations and that kind of stuff. I mean, I also managed to pick up an original Colt Delta Elite, you know, and I tested quite a few different loads out of the guns, including, you know, several bear loads. The most disappointing of these hotter loads had to be the HSM bear load, which is loaded with a 200 grain lead bullet, and it's only advertised at, you know, 1040 foot per second. And I found the actual velocity to be even slower than that, and that load also leaded my gun terribly. The Grizzly ammo comparatively pushes at 220 grain bear load at 1200 foot per second. So that HSM is a pretty, you know, pretty weak sauce. But I mentioned earlier, you know, most of today's loads seem to be loaded down a lot from the original load pushing that 200 grain bullet to an advertised, you know, 1260. I think the highest velocity I got with any of the ball ammo was somewhere around 1100 with the 180 grain bullets when I was testing. The load I usually carry in the gun, which is the Hornady Critical Duty, pushes a 175 grain bullet at about 1150, which isn't bad, but it is a bit shy of a 200 grain at 1260. But all that aside, I must admit that I've come to really like the 10mm cartridge. I wasn't able to keep the Delta Elite I used for testing, but I would love to pick up a full-size 1911 and 10mm, and we all know I love 1911s. I would also like to pick up a nice little carbine in 10mm, but those are kind of hard to come by. You know, the CMMG Banshee is really the only one that really shows any interest, and they're expensive. You know, and I've been daily carrying the XDM Elite Compact 10mm for about a year and a half at this point. And I've come to favor the cartridge over the 45 ACP. I tend to shoot a lot of just random whatever when I'm out and about. And even in the small gun, I notice it's easier to shoot targets past 100 yards since the 10mm shoots flatter than the 45 does. You know, of course, nothing beats a good revolver for long-range handgun shooting, but I could cover a whole episode just on that. But you're probably better off reading Six Guns by Elmer Keith than listening to me about long-range handgun shooting. You know, and of course, for dangerous game and self-defense, I still lean towards the 44 Magnum for myself and my needs, but the 10mm has proven itself to me to be a viable option in these situations. And of course, here in Alaska, having a daily carry gun that's also capable of dealing with the larger problems is not a bad thing at all. And I do feel a little bit silly for not giving the 10mm a chance sooner, but now that I've come to like the cartridge, I feel like everyone should at least try one. Alrighty, with the revamping of the podcast, something I would like to start doing is a weekly gear review. This could be something I bought and want to talk about, or it could be stuff people send me. Might be gun stuff, might be truck stuff, might be just general man stuff, who knows what. For this first review, I did kind of mess up a bit, but, you know, to be fair, I didn't buy this item exclusively for review. A few weeks ago, I had to deal with, let's just say a, problem coyote that would show up every night after dark and poop on my deck and out in my woodshed and on the running boards of my pickup and get in the trash and tear things up and just be a real general nuisance. And I asked all the surrounding neighbors if anybody knew about this coyote. Nobody did, so I knew he had to be coming from at least a mile away. I started off, you know, with some rubber buckshot, and, you know, after about a week of hitting them every night with rubber buckshot with no change in it, with no change and nobody claiming this coyote, I finally moved up and just dealt with the problem with some 3-inch double op buckshot. Anyway, point I'm trying to make is I realized during all this that the 12 gauge I use for these kind of things is a little bit inadequate in the dark, and I decided to add a light to it. I also thought at the time that whatever light I bought would be a good review item for the podcast, for the podcast with it getting back up and going. Unfortunately, I did not do much previous research on the product, just got online, picked one out, bought it, and went with it. And I did not know, or I did not realize at the time, how much free crap this company sends out to reviewers. So there is a royal buttload of reviews for this light out there. And in hindsight, I also feel a little bit stupid paying money for it when I probably could have sent them an email and got it for free. But, you know, live and learn, right? Anyway, the light I decided to get was the Olight Valkyrie PL Pro, which is a rechargeable light. And since there's so much coverage on this light out there, we're just going to kind of skim over my thoughts real fast, and I'll try to find better stuff to review in the future. So, anyway, yeah, real quick. The light has a magnetic charger, which I really like. It's a battery-maintaining charger, so you can leave it hooked up all the time if you want. You know, where that shotgun sits, rides in the bedroom, there's an outlet right there, and I've got a USB port plugged into the outlet. Running straight at the light, I just leave it charged all the time. And with it being magnetic, if I need the shotgun, grab, go. Don't have to worry about it. So the light has three modes. It's got a high mode, a low mode, and then a strobe. Low mode is only about 300 lumens, but they claim it lasts about 90 minutes runtime at that setting. And I found that to be accurate. On high mode, the light is 1,500 lumens, but only for 2 minutes. And then it gradually drops to 600 lumens, and then the battery will last about 45 minutes at that 600 lumen mode, which is still plenty bright. I must say, I've always kind of went for high lumens with lights, you know, moose lights, flashlights, whatever. But for shotgun ranges with this light, especially when it's dark out, 300 lumens is plenty. On high, this light is insanely bright, absolutely insanely bright. They claim it will shoot a beam about 280 meters. I only tested it out to 100 yards or so, but at 100 yards, it lights up, you know, on high, it lights up extremely bright, no issues making out targets. You know, I took it down to the range out 100 yards shooting, you know, the steel plates. You can see the steel plates and the berm and the backstop and all that kind of stuff fine off into the trees in the distance. You know, out in the woods, it works fine. Shining buck up back up here at the house, you know, under the deck, it just lights up everything. Plenty of light. Battery life, you know, it seems to be about what they say. I found the 90 minutes on low and 45 minutes on high after it comes down from that 1500 lumen seem to be fairly accurate. You know, and I put the light on a few different guns. You know, I started with 22 long rifle, pistol, moved up to a 9mm, 45, 10mm, put it on an AR-15, and I put it on my 12 gauge, obviously. And with the 12 gauge, I had to buy, it's a Benelli M4 clone. And anything Benelli M4 is expensive to upgrade. And the shotgun doesn't have any kind of Picatinny rail on it anywhere. So instead of spending, you know, $200 on a forearm that has a Picatinny rail on it, I just bought a Picatinny rail clamp that clamps. It's a universal one that clamps between the barrel and the tube. And it's working fine. And, you know, shooting 3-inch slugs at it, it's probably about the highest recoil you can get out of that shotgun. And the mount didn't move and the light held up fine. So the light does have, it has like, to attach it to the gun, it has like a little throw, it's almost like the lever on an adjustable bicycle. See, you know, you flip it 90 degrees, and then you push in on the mount, and you can pop it right off the Picatinny rail. It takes about a second to put it on or take it off. No issues with that mount holding up to the recoil of the 12 gauge, and no cools taking on and off. Really like the way the mount is on this gun. Something else I did is I also left the light outside overnight at 20 below, and it worked fine the next morning, which is a big deal up here. You know, I fully charged the battery, I set it out on the wood pile overnight, and it worked fine. And that's a big deal. Up here, I've had problems with a lot of battery-operated stuff not working in the cold. And if it doesn't work in the cold, it's no good for me. But yeah, since there's so much coverage on this light, I'm not going to ramble on and on about it. I'm very happy with the light. I think I paid about $130 for it on Amazon, something like that. It's probably also worth noting that Olight makes a pressure switch that works with this light, and attaches to the light where the magnet for the charger is, which, if the light was on a pistol, that'd be on the bottom of the light, you know, under the barrel on the shotgun, since I have it mounted sideways in front of the tube. It's right there. It'll be on the side of the gun. And I don't really feel any need to have a pressure switch on there for the shotgun use, because the way I got it mounted in front of the forearm, I can just hit the button to turn it on with my thumb, and it works fine. But yeah, overall, I'm pretty happy with the light, and I would recommend it. Alright guys, well, that pretty much wraps up this episode. I know it's not as long as the usual hour we shoot for, but I wanted to get the show back on the road, and hopefully the show will start to flow better. We can get good topics that I can talk about, you know, things for an hour or so without boring everyone. Of course, Nick will still be on the show when he has time, and we will probably run more free form or that fire from the hip, you know, style when I'm recording with him, like what we used to do. But, you know, he gets busy, I get busy. It's hard to make sure that we're together, we can be there for a phone call every week at the same time, you know, since he lives across the country in Nashville. You know, and for those of you that have been here from the start, you know that the show started as me and Nick just recording our phone calls where we were talking about guns for hours on end. And we decided that maybe other people would also enjoy listening to our ramblings. You know, of course, as the show got to where we had more listeners, I started feeling obligated to try to get weekly episodes out. And we just couldn't always make that happen with trying to do, you know, with a co-host. And the way it was set up before, I had a really difficult time trying to do solo episodes to keep content out, which is kind of why the show fizzled out. But yeah, with the show going back, I can't promise you I'll get an episode out every single week, but I'm really going to try to get weekly episodes out as the show gets back on the air. Yeah, but anyway, for those old-time listeners coming back, thank you for coming back and sticking with us through the last year and a half of downtime. For the new listeners, welcome, and thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. As always, we're always open to suggestions on how to improve the show and open to topic ideas and gear review suggestions. You know, at some point I should probably set up an email account for the show. But for now, the best way to send suggestions or comments is probably just to message the Facebook page for the show. Or if your friend, you know, a lot of you guys are friends with me on Facebook, just shoot me a message. And I'll try to get some other things set up here soon. I can also be found as the Shooter's Apprentice on most social media platforms, you know, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah, that's all I got. I'm going to go ahead and get this one wrapped up. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. And until next time, don't shoot yourself in the foot.